Ambassador Hoglant, welcome to the Voice of America. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, you have just visited Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. In Dushanbe, you met with the Tajik president, Emomali Rahmon, and in Tashkent, you held talks with the foreign minister, Abdulaziz Kamilov. Could you briefly tell us about the meetings?
Well, yes, I can tell you that I had one general message that I wanted to deliver to both governments. And then I had a very specific topic to talk about. The general message is that we, the United States, are aware that there's a little bit of gossip, maybe even a little bit of anxiety, that after the U.S. combat operation ends in Afghanistan at the end of this year, 2014, that we will lose interest in Central Asia. And in fact, because of the dominance of Russian media, sometimes those ideas are planted that the United States is going to run away. My message to both governments was, we have no intention to leave. In fact, we're looking for ways to increase our engagement, our cooperation, and our partnership in Central Asia in the coming years. So that was the general message. But then we also talked about a specific development issue called CASA 1000. But we can talk about that later.
Yes, I want to come back to post-2014 strategy of the United States in Central Asia. But Ukraine is on everybody's mind, as you know. And Central Asians are watching what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in Crimea, what Russia is doing. A lot of people are very nervous. You know that you served in Kazakhstan as an ambassador. You have close to 40% of Russian speakers living in Kazakhstan. So the United States has always maintained that there is no such thing as a great game, that the United States is not in competition with Russia and China when it comes to Central Asia, that it's more about cooperation. But given the situation in Ukraine today, what would you see in Central Asians? What is the position of the United States in the region?
Our position in the region, whether it's on the current issue of Ukraine or whatever it's been for the last 20 years, is that we firmly support the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the independent countries in Central Asia. Now, that's become a real issue with Ukraine because of the most current issue of Crimea right now. I'm very much aware that there are citizens in Central Asia who are aware of what's going on, despite the propaganda coming from the Russian mass media. I'm aware that civil society is debating the current events in Ukraine. I know that the governments are watching very, very closely. Of course, because of the very close relationship with Russia, they have to measure very carefully what they say, but I do know they're watching closely, because these are issues of sovereignty and territorial integrity.
I mentioned that you served as an ambassador in Kazakhstan, but you also served in Tajikistan, and then you also led the mission in Turkmenistan. So you know Central Asia. You know how the region works. And I'm sure you're also following the situation, for example, in Uzbekistan. Succession seems to be near. If all goes well, there will be parliamentary elections in Uzbekistan later this year and perhaps presidential elections early next year. You have a president's daughter in an open battle with the National Security Service. When you look at all that, I posed the question recently at a conference here in Washington to U.S. experts. I asked them, what should U.S. do to help countries like Uzbekistan move forward? And the best answer I got was, well, the United States should listen to the people of Uzbekistan. It should try to connect with the people of Uzbekistan. Are you doing that?
First of all, let me say that it is certainly never in a foreign diplomat's place to comment on the internal affairs of another country. We might have conversations behind closed doors with our friends and counterparts in those capitals, but we don't comment in public. But you raised a very, very important issue, and you gave the right answer. Connect with the people. I think that our people-to-people diplomacy is increasingly strong, not only in traditional ways through educational exchanges, but increasingly now these days through social media. And I think that's very positive. Of course, there's always much more that we can do. And that is part of what we'll be looking at as our engagement increases in the coming years. How can we increase people-to-people engagement? Because that's essential.
What we hear a lot, for example, in capitals like Tashkent is that, fine, you know, American officials come visit, they give their official statements, and that's it. They don't really care about the ordinary people.
Oh, I don't think that's true. You know, when American officials visit, we're on very tight schedules. And so we obviously have to have our meetings with government officials. However, I, for example, anytime that I travel, I always try to make it a point to meet with civil society. During this most recent trip when I was in Tajikistan, I had enough time that I went to an American corner and met with a good number of students. We had very good open discussion. So we really do, as diplomats, try to schedule enough time that we can have public events like that separate from our official events. That's important. It's really important.
We know that the Obama administration is reviewing its strategy in Central Asia as we speak. And the war in Afghanistan is coming to an end. What will be the critical interests of the United States in the region in the coming years? How will those interests shape your engagement in Central Asia?
Well, I can tell you that the U.S. government, in an interagency process, is still in the process of looking at what should be our policy for the next 3 years out towards the end of the Obama administration in Central Asia. In fact, on the State Department side, I'm leading that discussion. I have colleagues in other parts of the government that I'm working with. We will not make any radical change because I feel that our policy, whether it's had its ups or downs in whichever country over the last 20 years, has been a fundamental policy, which is support the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the countries. And then, with that given, we look for ways to cooperate in a broad range of areas. Democracy and human rights, civil society, obviously important. Economic and trade issues, very important. Security, whether it's counter-narcotics, counter-terrorism, transnational criminal activities, we have to have a broad range of issues where we can find interaction and intersection with both the governments and the people.
I'm sure you have seen the recent list compiled by the Politico, where they look at the top 25 most awkward allies of the United States. Uzbekistan is number 7. It's called Corruption Corridor. And Tajikistan, which you've recently visited, is called Anarcho State.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did read that, in fact. And I have to say that sometimes the role of journalism is to be provocative and to start discussion. I can't say that I agreed with absolutely everything that they said. Some of it was not completely false, completely wrong. But what was interesting to me was that almost all of the countries that I have focused on in my diplomatic career appeared on that list, including Pakistan, which was near the top of the list.
And Afghanistan.
I would say that the reality is always much more complicated than what you can put in 100 words in a short article.
We talked a bit about the fears that the U.S. presence is going to diminish in the region as the U.S. forces and international coalition leaves Afghanistan. And one of the major criticisms has always been that America does not understand Central Asia, that they were here because of Afghanistan. They increased the presence. They increased the engagement with Central Asian states because of Afghanistan. And now the war is coming to an end, and America's role will also go down. How do you respond to that kind of criticism? I'm sure you hear that a lot here in Washington and both in the region.
Well, you know what? I have to respond very honestly to you. You've raised a valid issue. Certainly the last 10, 12, 13 years, some of our engagement has been influenced by Afghanistan. That's true. That's part of history. No one can avoid that. However, let me take you back to the very beginning of independence of these states. We were the first nation to recognize many of the independent states of Central Asia. My government committed to establish diplomatic relations with absolutely every country and to establish embassies. And for that first 10 years, we were deeply, deeply involved in building that diplomatic relationship and in building the people-to-people relationships. That's why I have strong confidence that for the coming 10 years, we're not going to run away. We're not going to cut and run, as some people would like to have you believe.
I know we don't have much time left, but I have one more question about regional integration.
Yes, indeed. In fact, that was one of the issues that I was working on when I visited Tajikistan and Uzbekistan just about a week ago. We have, the U.S. government, something called the New Silk Road Vision, and that is to link Central Asia with South Asia. It's to have regional integration, and one of the most important ways to do that is through infrastructure. One realistic way that's being debated even today in a meeting in Istanbul is to create something called the CASA 1000 project, which would have Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan sell their excess electricity in the summer to Pakistan. That would be a very solid link of infrastructure, and it would benefit everyone, the selling state and the buying state.
And who do you want to invest in this financially?
Well, once this, any business like that is going to be have to have commercial. It'll have to have multilateral banks. The United States, to show that we are really, truly interested, have already set aside $15 million as seed money. The Asian Development Bank is interested. The Islamic Development Bank is interested. The Kuwait Wealth Fund is interested. So once all of the parameters for this business project are in place, I'm confident that the investors will show up.
And what can Central Asian states do to get it started? Some specific steps that they can take?
Well, there have been, first, two things. Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan are most involved in this. They're working on the pricing right now. They have to find a realistic price that Pakistan can accept. But then there was also a very positive development recently from Uzbekistan when I was meeting with Foreign Minister Kamilov. He told me, we have not in the past been very much in favor of this project, but we will not interfere in its implementation. That's a very big step forward. That's a step of regional friendship. That's a step of regional cooperation. And I'm very grateful for that.
Well, on that very positive note, we'll thank you for joining us today. Ambassador Hoogland, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. It was very interesting, and thank you for the opportunity.